answered, "There is something else." I sigh and lean back in the chair.
"You were missing so much school," Mother says. "You were so sick. We knew you would have enough challenges as it was, and we honestly didn't think you'd ever be able to go to school again."
"It was a mistake. We realize that now," Father says. "But we uploaded the 10th through 12th grade curriculum of the Boston Unified School District. It was probably too much information, not what you would have absorbed naturally, but we can't take it back. It doesn't work that way, not without starting from scratch."
None of it is really mine. My synapses fire like a fireworks display. Thoreau, the French Revolution, the earthquake, the Second Great Depression, current events, word by word. The invisible boundary. 10%. The most important part. Who shall say what prospect life offers to another? To live deep and suck out all the marrow. All of it. I look at my hands, clasp them and unclasp them. Perfect. Monster. Hands. 1,000 points. 1,000 illegal points. Clasping. Unclasping. The butterfly. Suck out the marrow. The marrow of Jenna Fox. My feet fidget. They tap. The way they always did. The nervous gesture of my childhood. My borrowed feet, remember. Something that is still mine. I calm them. "Then I should have the key to the closet," I finally say. Mother looks at Father. She's not the deferring type, but in all these uncertain matters she defers to him. I see this is not her world. She's feeling her way through something foreign. She only wanted her daughter back, would pay any price for it. But the price is navigating uncertainty and secrets that seem to keep spinning faster than she is. She's wide-eyed, staring at the netbook and Father. He remains steady, his eyes faltering for only a microsecond. But it's a faltering microsecond that is a lifetime for me. I can see. He is afraid. Maybe terrified. He calculates his reply.
"What do you mean, Jenna?" he asks calmly.
"What are they afraid of? What do they think?" I feel a ping, chilling and alert. The key. Their eyes are riveted on me, invested, waiting for an answer. "The key to the small door at the back of my closet," I tell them. I see the visible relief on both their faces. "If I need to really get out of sight one day, it would be logical to go there."
"Yes, of course," Father agrees.
"I have it somewhere. I'll find it," Mother says. She is too eager. She rummages through a drawer and produces two keys. "I think it's one of these. I'll go try them both." I hurry upstairs to my closet, pocketing the keys Mother handed me. I rush, afraid she may follow. I overturn my hamper and riffle through dirty clothes and sheets, looking for the pants I wore 4 days ago. I find them and search the pocket. The key to Mother's closet is still there. This is the key that made Father falter, the one he thought I was talking about. I scan my closet for a hiding place. I kneel in the corner and pull back the carpet, tuck the key there, and carefully push the carpet back down on the tack strip. I place my hand over the patch of carpeting, like some truth will filter through. Something that is all 100% mine. My hand hovers, but no truth comes. Only the knowledge that maybe this is my way of balancing the power. Trust. It's midnight. The house is dark. Quiet. Mother and Lily have been in bed for an hour. I watch Year 7, Jenna Fox. It's the only disc I've watched more than once. This is my fourth time. 7-year-old Jenna leads Father through the house. He has a blindfold on. Lily must be filming. Glimpses of Mother smiling and following along, giggles from Jenna, and hollow protests from Father punctuate the journey.
"Where are you taking me, Jenna?"
You can't ask, Daddy, Jenna wails.
The moon?
Daddy!
The Mayflower?
I watch Father being pulled, pushed, and turned. He trusts me as I lead him from room to room and down hallways, step up, step down. He exaggerates his movements, lifting his feet like he's stepping onto a stage. But he trusts me. He trusts 7-year-old Jenna. What did I do to make that change? They reach the kitchen doorway. A large, lopsided blue cake is on the kitchen table, candles already burned halfway down during the long, blindfolded walk. The icing sags and bunches out on one side, like a slow-moving glacier, bringing tipping candles along with it.
Stop, Jenna says.
Turn. No, this way, Daddy. Bend down. Ready? I remove the blindfold.
Surprise!
Mother and I yell and clap our hands. Father throws his hands in the air. He gasps. Jenna beams. Her gap-toothed smile is nearly angelic.
It's beautiful. It's perfect. It's the best cake I ever had.
She made it herself, Mother says proudly. We doubled the batch because she wanted it big. Mother and Father share a glance, a brief look that flies over Jenna's bouncing head. It is a full look, just between them. A look of love, satisfaction, fulfillment, easiness, completeness. Everything they want and need is right in that room.
It's big, all right, and blue.
He continues to praise and adore it, just as he adores Jenna. I watch them dig in with forks and no plates. More laughter. More squeals. More looks. It makes me feel all the ways I've wanted to feel ever since I woke up. Trusted. Happy. Enough. Father takes a finger full of blue icing and decorates Jenna's nose, and she squeals. And now, in the quiet of my room, I laugh too. I laugh out loud, just as I have done every time I've watched it. Sanctuary. The church is empty. No priests. No Lily. Not even sweet singing voices to stir the air. The sanctuary is in the shape of a cross. I stand in the crosshairs, feeling like an imposter, waiting to be found at any moment and ushered out. Sanctuary. I weigh the meanings. A holy place. Refuge. A place of forgiveness. Rows of candles flit either side of me in the smaller arms of the church. I step forward, my clumsy feet scuffing the floor, echoing across the stillness. Souls, if there is such a thing, are nourished and mended here. In case of error, they can't be uploaded like the whole Boston curriculum. There are no spares in case one is lost. Souls are given only once. I walk up the 3 steps to the altar and step over the small railing that separates the masses from all that is sacred. I am trespassing, but I can't stop. I wait to feel something, different. But who knows what a soul feels like? I dare to step closer, violating the holy space that surrounds me. I rest my hands on the altar, feeling the linen cloth only meant for a priest's fingers. History. I can feel it in the threads. I close my eyes, searching for my own history, the intangible bits that will tell me if what I am is enough. A voice booms.
You shouldn't be up there.
My eyes fly open and I turn around. Just as quickly, I turn back, carefully placing my hands on the altar, willing them not to tremble. I ignore the warning and the footsteps getting closer.
Still can't talk to the dickhead, hmm?
Oh, God. I have to say something. That's not a word you should be using in church, I answer. I hear him getting closer, his footsteps softening as he walks up the steps.
Then I guess we both have one mark against us. You walking where you shouldn't, and me saying a bad word.
I hear a few more steps and his shoe banging the railing as he steps over it. I turn around and face him. 2.
What?
I only have 1 mark against me. You have 2. You also stepped over the railing. His face contorts to an unflattering mix of frustration and anger.
You are so...
But just as quickly, his scowl is gone, and the sharpness vanishes. His soft brown eyes stare into mine for a second or 2. Or 3.
Jenna, he sighs. I don't want to argue. I just came looking for you. You were supposed to meet me over an hour ago, down at the Lavanderia. If you don't want to work on the project with me anymore, Father Rico has someone else who...
No, I say. He walks closer, an arm's length from me.
No, you don't want to work with me?
I can't answer. What I should say and what I want to say are 2 different things. Have I always been this mixed up? Ethan grabs my arms.
Jenna, you have to talk to me.
I need to... I want to keep working with you, Ethan, but... He bends over and kisses me. And I kiss him back. We are kissing on the altar. We are passionately kissing on the altar of the church in front of all the sainted statues. How many marks against us is that? I push him away.
This isn't right, I say. Listen, I know I've done some things in the past.
Ethan, this isn't about you. Things have changed. It's me. There are things...
Tell me, he says.
I look into his eyes. They call them windows to the soul. I think I can see Ethan's. What does he see when he looks into mine? I look away and see more eyes. The statues of the saints watching us from their niches. Joseph, Mary, St. Francis. Their gazes split me wide.
You mustn't tell. For all our sakes. Especially yours. You mustn't say anything to anyone.
Not here, I tell him. Let's go outside. Telling. Like the church, the cemetery is empty, but here there are no corners or shadows to hide listening ears, just the dead. They may hear, but they can't tell and never will. They are 1 step past the dark place. I haven't even told my parents about that. How can I tell Ethan? We walk on the grass, stepping over and around the tarnished markers that remember lives and moments in time. Where we are going, I don't know. It doesn't seem to be the place that is important, but the steps in between. Ethan finally stops at a dark, moldy niche, holding a statue of a watchful saint that is streaked with years of weather and grime. This must be the place of telling. My head hurts. It's the first time I've felt this kind of pain, almost like a headache. Are my biochips punishing me for trying to reveal the truth? Maybe I'm programmed never to admit anything. Maybe I'm self-destructing even as I stand here. I wince and drop my head into my hands, rubbing my temples.
Never mind, Jenna, you don't have to tell me,
Ethan says. I press my temples, trying to sort it out. I need to, I say. I have to tell someone. It is odd. The sun is shining. The grass is a brilliant green. The cemetery is almost festive, with colorful flowers dotting the neatly trimmed graves. It is a shocking contrast to the ugly truth I'm about to reveal to Ethan. I lay my hands out, palms up, toward him. Take my hands, I say. He does. He squeezes them. I wonder at the feelings it sends up my arms, through my brain, through all that is salvaged and new. I wonder at what is real and what is replicated. The braiding of genuine and fake. I wonder at the miracle Father has fashioned. It's not real, Ethan, I tell him. His brows draw together and he shakes his head. The accident, I tell him. I lost my hands in the accident. These are created, like prosthetics. He gently turns my hands and examines them, as though he doesn't believe me.
They're beautiful, he says.
He doesn't let go. He caresses them.
Can you feel this?
I nod. I feel every callus and crease of his fingers. I feel touch in ways I never did before. Velvety, fluid, and when I concentrate, I can almost feel his skin as my own. I sigh. This isn't all, Ethan. There's more.
Like?
My arms? My legs? I watch his eyes.